take more time. Give yourself as much flexibility as you possibly can, because we are in unknown waters right now. And while there's a tremendous demand for the product, it's difficult to bring it to the market. I will say it comes with a good thing. The rents are just going up. When it's difficult to get product on the market and there's a huge demand for that product, I don't like planning on higher rents, but I've never not seen it over the last 18 months. Right. It's definitely happening.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Steve Olson is the director of the Fourplex Investment Group. They build master plan fourplex communities in Utah, Idaho, Arizona, and Texas. Steve, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me, sir.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Well, I started in real estate when I was in college. I worked for one of the late night infomercial gurus, just shipping boxes and administrative stuff. His name is Robert Allen. Many people probably know him. And I just inadvertently heard some of the real estate coaches talking about real estate. And I thought, hey, that kind of sounds pretty good. And at the time, I wanted to be an attorney. I was going to go to law school. And I thought I could flip some houses and go to law school. And then after I did my first deal, I realized, why would I go to law school? This is way better. Right. And so I have been involved in this business in one way or the other ever since then. I've been through a couple ups and downs. I made it through the crash. I want to say I made it through COVID. Who knows what that even means anymore? But I'm still here, and I work with the Fourplex Investment Group, building these master plan communities. I eat my own cooking, typically try to acquire a couple of these a year, and have started putting together some bigger deals as well with some of our investors. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. Tell us about the Fourplex Investment Group. What is that?
That's a group of five companies that partner together. We're based here in Utah, where I'm coming from today. The concept was hatched back in 2010. If you were in the business in 2010, you know that nobody was buying land
right
in 2010, at least in the markets where we operate, predominantly the Western U.S. And if you were buying land, people thought you were completely insane. And we were still reeling from 08. What does this all mean? So on and so forth. But there was still a lot of cash out there, a lot of cash on the sidelines looking for a secure return, a recession-resistant return, and really a fourplex is an excellent way to achieve those goals. So the whole concept was hatched that, all right, if we could build new fourplex communities and put them within an HOA, because you and I both know these old, dilapidated fourplex communities that are in every neighborhood in America, right? They were built in the 70s and 80s, and they look like garbage now because there isn't a continuity in the ownership. Right. So the thought was, build them new. Let's put HOA investor-owned control over the top of them. It gives people the advantages of multifamily because they have multiple tenants servicing that debt, but they have that great single family debt, 30-year fixed, true 30-year amortized. So it gives you a way to kind of bridge both those gaps. So we've been building these communities ever since. We're in four states right now. The secret sauce is a pre-construction deal. That's our value add. If an investor is willing to come in and close on a construction loan and go through the build, go through the stabilization process, we can actually sell it at a better cap rate than they can get on the open market. So as an example, if you hire a realtor to go find you a fourplex right now, right, in a lot of these growing markets, that cap rate's in the fours right now.
Right.
That's what it's going to take.
Right.
And if it's higher than that, then there's some hair on that deal you don't know about yet.
Right.
So we just disclose the hair. We say, well, it's not built yet. Right. You got to go through this construction process. And right now, that's something everybody feels because that takes longer. Interest rates are going up. There's some risk that you absorb in the new construction world. So in exchange, we say, hey, in a market where you're trading at a 4.5, 5 cap, we're selling at a 6.5. And that's the investor's cherry on top for going through that process.
So walk me through that. I'm sorry if I'm a little bit slow here today, but when you say that's the investor's cherry on top, it maybe just break down the whole who the investor is, what part they play in your process, because I'm not sure I quite grasp that.
No, that's okay. You and I, we went in cold on that one, so no worries. So take it like this. Let's say we identify 10 acres in Phoenix, Arizona. And we go through all the preliminary plat issues. We determine, yeah, this can be a fourplex community, right? We're going to pre-sell or pre-reserve that entire project. So we'll subdivide it up into 54 plexes, right? And then we go out to our investors, Bob the doctor, Susie the attorney, Fred the business owner, right? These are the kind of people that say, yeah, I want a fourplex in that community.
Right.
So we're the builder for the entire community, but each of those fourplex lots is closed on and acquired by a separate non-PA type investor.
Got it.
Right. That's who the investor is. Our property management company does all the lease up, all the ongoing management. Our HOA division does all the community maintenance and community supervision. But if you drive through that project, it looks like a whole bunch of townhomes.
Right.
But in reality, it's platted as fourplexes and it's owned by different investors.
Got it. I see. And they can get traditional 30-year debt on that. And, you know, just like you're saying, the benefits of owning a single family home, except you've got, you know, a fourplex to go with it. So that's really intriguing. And then what were you saying about the cap rate? Why, what's the value add there, or what's the play on the cap rate? Rewind that for me.
Well, just to kind of go foundational level here at the risk of being too complicated. We all know in an apartment complex, the value add, the traditional is, okay, I'm going to go find a dilapidated apartment complex that's underperforming for one reason or the other. And over the next 18 months to 2 years, I'm going to get that complex in tip-top shape.
Right.
I've added value. Now it's making the most money that it can. Its expenses and income is all in line, right? Well, if you want to buy that apartment complex when it's stabilized, when the value has been added, you're going to pay top dollar.
Sure.
You're going to pay a 4.5 cap rate.
Right.
Right. Same thing goes for a brand new fourplex that has tenants in it, right? You're not just going to walk into that thing at an awesome cap rate. If all the risk is taken out of the deal, right, then that's what somebody's going to want to sell it for.
Sure.
So what we're saying is, hey, look, here's our projected income expenses. Here's our projected cap rate when this is done. We're willing to sell it at, say, a 6 or 6.5 cap because you coming in, taking the construction loan where we don't have to go borrow that money.
Mm.
We don't have to go through that brain damage. That's valuable to us. So you're taking that risk. You're saying that fourplex doesn't exist yet, but I believe this pro forma. I believe that in 18 months, it'll have an NOI of X amount of dollars.
Right.
So I'm willing to take that risk.
Right.
All about future value.
And for that, and for taking that risk, you sell it to them at a higher potential stabilized cap rate, say 6.5 or whatever it is.
There you go.
Right. Got it. Okay. Sorry. I'm running a little bit slow. Must not have had enough.
No, it's a new concept.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, it's not something we've explored this model on this show yet. So this is kind of fun to really dig into the nuance of it. It seems like there would be some challenges on a couple of fronts. And tell me if I'm missing this somehow. But challenge number one, I would assume, is let's say you're developing 10 acres and you're putting 54 plexes on it, finding 50 investors who want to invest in that style of project. Is that a challenge?
Occasionally, it's been a challenge. Right now, if we had 500 of these things, they'd be gone tomorrow. It really depends if you select your markets and your neighborhoods right. We're constantly building relationships with the investors. You know, at first, yeah, this was a mind blow. What is this thing?
Right.
And somebody will dip their big toe in. They'll be very careful at first, understandably so, right? But when that thing turns over, they get their certificate of occupancy. The leases start coming in. They start getting rent payments. That's when they call us and say, I'll take two more in the next one. And here are my three friends. So as long as you do right by the investors and you deliver the product, it doesn't tend to be a challenge. But that can ebb and flow with the challenges in the market, right? Sometimes things happen in the market that make it take a little longer. It's a little tougher to deliver that. And that's not hard to understand right now when we're dealing with supply chain, construction, right? Stuff just happens. So sometimes the market is nice and easy and the investors line up and this is easy. Other times it's brutal. And, you know, you got to work together to get to that finish line. But typically once you get there and those rents start coming in, and then people go, yeah, that's worth it.
I mean,
because you got to focus on those markets with population growth, low unemployment. If you're building real estate in markets like that and you're patient, you will generally win.
Right.
Right. That becomes difficult to screw up. But between those two points, you don't control all that. The market can change, so you got to be flexible.
Finding investors is one thing. Do you guys handle all of the lease up for them? Is this really fourplex, build for rent, turnkey, where they just, they own it, but yet you guys own it and manage it, or not, or they own it, but you manage it, you find the tenant, you lease it up. I mean, this is completely turnkey. Is this what I'm hearing?
You know, to the extent that new construction can be turnkey, this is it, right? Well, when you're taking something from raw dirt all the way to leased up with tenant, there's going to be things that happen along the way, of course, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, our property management company that we're affiliated with handles the lease up as well as the ongoing management. There's a tricky thing in this business model that we had to work through long ago. And it's kind of similar to the HOA side. If we build 54 plexes and tell all the investors, hey, good luck, go lease them up. Oh man, it's horrifying.
Right.
Right. So we actually have a requirement, and it's built into our CC&Rs, that you use our management company. Mm. And most people go along with that. They understand. Every now and then somebody gripes about it, and we have to hold their feet to the fire, because when you let those horses out of the barn, it's tough to get them back in.
Yeah. Oh, I can only imagine. And then just the chaos that would surround, you know, two of the 54 plexes being run by somebody else. Anyway, that could be a complete mess. How about getting your investors across the debt finish line? I mean, that's a whole series of people and processes. I can only imagine that you say, hey, I mean, do you have preferred lenders they have to work with? How does that work?
Yeah, that's another one. We learned a long time ago, you've got to have a solid preferred lender that knows investors. Because, you know, the investor, they're going to look at it from the standpoint of, well, I know a guy and he's really affordable. And that's great, but there's a detailed process here. And affordability that can quickly get trumped by inconvenience. And really, our guy works on volume anyway, very rarely beat out. But the big key here is to get a construction loan on the front end, you've got to be qualified for the long-term financing, right? They call it a Fannie Mae AUS approval, automatic underwriting system. And when we can deliver that to a local bank that likes to give construction loans to our investors, they'll give that because they know, okay, Bob the doctor is approved. He can refinance out of this construction loan when the property is built. So our task then becomes conditioning Bob that, hey, Bob, don't go buy a Lamborghini for the next 12 months. Don't go do anything stupid that's going to affect your ability to qualify for a mortgage 12 months from now. And Bob generally behaves himself. We've had a couple of instances where he did not. So we helped him sell it. We helped him get some kind of a portfolio loan. But really, 99 times out of 100, it works.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought about that. You're not dealing with one person that could make, you know, again, serious changes to their lendability, if that's even a word. You're dealing with a lot of
people. It is now.
I like that. Thanks for the vote of confidence.
Yeah, sure.
That's really absolutely intriguing. What are some, and you've been pretty candid and told us a lot of things, I think, that you said, hey, you know, we've learned some of this the hard way. Is there anything else you can think of? You said, hey, here's some kind of learning curve or learning moment, things that happened in the build for rent fourplex space?
You know what's on my mind this morning? We have a couple of projects. These are specifically in Idaho. And we are just getting brutalized on overages. Construction is going to take a lot longer. Mm. And in our contract with the investors, it's a fixed bid 12-month contract. And these contracts were entered into a long time ago. Oh, wow. And so it's going to cost millions to pay the investors the penalties that will be owed to them because of going over the 12 months,
wow.
Right? And so to me, when you're building today, the name of the game is flexibility, right? Not committing to anything too far in advance, giving yourself longer construction loans, just because it's just, even when you build the volume that we do, getting the subcontractors to show up regularly and streamline that process, it's tough because, you know, back in 08, a lot of these subcontractors, right, the tile guy, the framers, a lot of these guys went out of business and never came back.
Right.
And now we have all this demand, but we don't have that trade base. Mm-mm. Finding these guys is just really difficult. So, you know, take more time, give yourself as much flexibility as you possibly can, because we are in unknown waters right now. And while there's a tremendous demand for the product, it's difficult to bring it to the market. I will say it comes with a good thing. The rents are just going up. when it's difficult to get product on the market and there's a huge demand for that product, I don't like planning on higher rents, but I've never not seen it over the last 18 months. Right. It's definitely happening.
Right. Yeah.
It's absolutely a good point. Yeah. That's intriguing. I mean, like you said, 12 months to get it built. And if you don't get it built, man, that's a lot of late fees. Yeah. That's a lot of heroes and how you deal with that. I guess that'll determine where you go next in business. And again, how you rewrite your contracts. I mean, maybe at this point in time, you know, I'm sure you guys are rewriting stuff where you say, hey, look, 12, it might be 18. I mean, material supplies, availability. It's just, I mean, there are a lot of things happening right now that are outside of everyone's control. So
that's right. We've made a lot of changes for when we roll new product out the door, but we have to live with the past too. We've got to honor those commitments and get them to the finish line.
Right. Wow. Steve, thanks so much for taking the time to share today. I love what you guys are doing. That's really intriguing. I guess one last question on that. The big hot button topic is affordable housing, which we won't get into why housing is unaffordable necessarily, but right. We'll be here for way too long for that.
Yeah.
But you know, tell us on this front, is there opportunity to build fourplex affordable housing? Do you see that as a, you know, possible, you know, next move for you guys?
Well, I just want to qualify that statement because when you say the words affordable housing,
right,
it really depends on who you're talking to. One person is going to hear that is Section 8 government subsidized housing. And generally, when you say affordable housing, that's what is intended. But some people hear, oh, I just need some housing that's affordable, right? That's not sky high, you know, because these apartment complexes keep getting renovated up to Class A status. The rents are ginormous. So I see it on two fronts. We actually are just working on one here in Utah where the city did require an affordable component. We have units that will be rented at 60, 80, and 100% of the AMI, the area median income, and that we're getting a little bit into affordable weeds there. So they required us to peel off some of those. Mm. And you look at the cost of building those versus what the rents that you can charge are, and there are some perks that we get with that, that we can pass on the investors that make it worth it to them to acquire a unit where the rent they can charge is capped. Right. Now, luckily, that rent flows with the AMI as it adjusts.
Sure.
But then you look at housing that is not affordable housing, but it's just affordable. It's easier to afford for a market renter.
Right.
And we're certain, I actually think that's what we are. You know, we're not building these giant clubhouses with a Ritz-Carlton style pool and a trash valet, but we're not building, you know, you can't build C-class. We're like a high B.
Right.
Where we give some good amenities, but we're not going over the top. So they're a couple hundred bucks less a month than they are for a Class A apartment. And that has served us very well. Even though it's not the definite definition of affordable housing, it's a little more affordable.
Right.
Therefore, it's beneficial.
Yeah. And I think that's absolutely intriguing. Just like you said, the amenities aren't required in this style of build. It's just everything you've talked about on this project, I haven't pictured those Class A amenities. I'm picturing a place to live. So yeah. That's,
yeah. We give them some good things. You know, they get a garage, right? They have a little more square footage, but we don't have your trash valet and you're not going to be able to have a banquet at our clubhouse. You can work out there. We got pool, but it's nothing crazy.
Right. Man, absolutely loved it. Steve, thanks for taking the time to come on today. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Just go to our website. It's easy. Fig like the fruit.us. Fig.us.
Awesome. Steve, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.